G'day guys, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto Catch-Up. My name's Ted and I'm joined by the great man, Mr. Pav.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Pav, how you doing?
Good. Even though everything's falling apart, I'm still here.
Yeah, look, bit of an eventful couple of days. We're going to unpack it all for you guys and even jump into a little bit of a segment about real world assets. It's been a hot topic of late, so you stick around for that one.
Be a good one because everything's now sort of going back to pricing almost, you know, a month ago from now. Everyone's like, oh, I missed it. I mean, if you really have long-term conviction, now's when you're sort of doing your research and doing some scanning. So I think we've got a good episode lined up for everyone.
Yep, absolutely. And at the end of the episode, as promised a couple of weeks ago, we did say we'd do a bit of a demo mode competition.
Oh, you're going so down. It's crazy.
Nah. Well, it's going to be good, but I'm confident in this one. So we're going to pick three assets every week that we're buying and track our trades and basically see who comes out on top every month. So starting this week, so make sure you stick around for that. But let's unpack what's been happening this week. As you mentioned, markets have dipped a fair bit over the last few days.
Indeed.
Obviously driven a lot by what's been happening in the Middle East, particularly as Iran retaliated from an airstrike on the Iranian embassy in Syria.
Yeah, no idea.
So, I did a little bit of digging and they retaliated by sending some drones to attack Israel, but they were shot down. So, I guess there's a lot of people teetering whether, you know, this could be the start of some more major conflict, particularly with the US supporting Israel. Like, will they get involved now that Iran is involved? A lot of FUD in the market. What do you have for us today, Pav?
Yeah, I think it sort of ties back nicely to what we said at the start. Like, the fundamentals haven't changed, but people's confidence just in risk on assets in general has just taken a bit of a backseat. So stocks are down. US dollar is absolutely soaring. So like, whenever that's happening, it's hard for anything that's in terms of a non-risk asset like crypto to really have any favorable tailwinds. So, you know, we're seeing levels back to where we were in October 2023. So what do you remember about October 2023? Crypto market specific, not about what you had for breakfast.
mate, remind me. My memory's terrible.
It was the start of the run. Like when we really had that big breakout on Bitcoin, it all started in October. So that was like way down here. So from October, that was back when Bitcoin was at 26K. So in terms of like the US dollar, it's resetting back to a point where Bitcoin started its big major breakout that it hasn't really stopped from. We're back there right now. So for me, it's a sign of the times that, you know, if we do start to get back into these higher regions on the US dollar, where if this is going up, the rest of the world's on risk assets are usually struggling. When this starts to turn over again, like it did back in October, that's for me setting up potentially the bullish environment again, where risk on assets could go on for its next big move. So I wouldn't say that the selling's done for Bitcoin at this stage, but I also wouldn't say that it could go lower. It's one of these situations where we've got the ETFs now. It really comes down to what's happening on that front as to where the markets will go. A lot of people are calling that, you know, oh, gold's fine, gold's holding up fine, but Bitcoin had that massive fallout on the weekend. But reality is gold doesn't trade on the weekends either.
Yeah.
And we saw Monday open, Bitcoin's been following in lockstep what gold's price has done anyway. So I think a lot of it will also sort of come down to other developments around the world. So we had announced this morning, Hong Kong approved their spot Bitcoin and a spot Ethereum ETF. So exchange traded funds. So now in Hong Kong, certain individuals will be able to access both Bitcoin and Ethereum in a spot nature or spot custody solution to be announced, really. It's not really been a defined date on when it will go live, but we've seen what this has done for Bitcoin.
Yep.
And for people who don't
understand the implications of that is Hong Kong may not seem like a huge market, but Hong Kong is a part of China. But it's a bit of an interesting one because China has banned crypto, but Hong Kong's like kind of in China and sort of external as well. And they've allowed, so it's from my understanding, it's going to open up the crypto markets, or in this case, the Bitcoin ETF and the Ethereum ETF to China, to Chinese investors. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. And a lot of people think, oh, well, is there that many people there? Like, yes, there's a lot of people there. So there's a whole lot of money just on the sidelines essentially as well. So I think as much as like, you know, we pay attention to things like Bitcoin ETF flows in the US, like we have been on the show here, which is this little fancy table. We're probably going to have another table to add to this, which will be the Chinese flows moving forward as well. So we've got basically, again, you don't see this in any other market, I guess, other than commodities, where you do have like the whole globe essentially fluctuating on a single asset. So it's going to be interesting to see the dynamic, especially with the halving coming up now, 3 to 4 days away, depending on what clock you're looking at. It's all about block height. So it's all sort of coming to a head. But for me, if we're talking about where price is right now, I mean, I'm just following previous week market structure at the moment. And for me, we're still at a point now we could go up or down. So unless, absolutely have a bit more of a conviction on what you're looking to do or whatever your personal plan might be. I mean, you might be just a DCA type of person anyway. Yep. These could be the sort of price discounts that you were waiting for to add to your long-term positions. But I wouldn't say the pain could be over. And also just want to point out, if the pain isn't over, some of these altcoins have already been decimated. They could go further down as well. So another way to sort of contextualize that on a chart is something like Bitcoin dominance. Just a reminder for those listening on the potty, we actually do have a video series and feed of this on YouTube. So come check it out if you want to see the charts. But we talked about all of last year, that 60-64% range being where this could likely go to. And looks like we just started the move up now. So once we get to that and we really start to turn around, that's when we get the fully fledged alt season starting. And that's when, you know, the bull market that we all know and love coming to life. So,
but as we know, after the Bitcoin halving, typically Bitcoin dominance does head upwards for a period, and Bitcoin all-time highs, and Bitcoin's all in the news and whatnot. And then altcoin season seems to follow that. So I think probably the next few months will be the big focus will be on Bitcoin. If history is anything to go by. But if anyone's a bit concerned about what's going on in the geopolitical realm, like, I guess we had a similar sort of reaction when the Russia-Ukraine conflict started.
Yep.
And, you know, there was a lot of fud in the markets, not just crypto, but all sorts of markets, you know, equities and what are the markets we're talking about?
Everything.
All the markets.
All the markets.
But yeah, so a similar thing. So the market kind of tanked because people were fearful, started selling off. And then before you know it, everything started coming back.
Yep.
And you know, the conflict is still going on there. Not to say that this conflict in the Middle East will be like, you know, follow the same sort of trajectory. Like we're talking about, you know, the US potentially getting involved to support Israel. So nothing, you know, you can't really guarantee anything at this stage, but like, in terms of like a crypto perspective, it's not the biggest concern right now. If it starts to develop and more things start to get heated, then maybe it's time to start to get a bit fearful. But for the time being, I'd say it's still very early stages and too early to call.
But no, good shouts. And I mean, also, if you're sort of a seasoned person or talk to anyone that's been in the markets for more than one cycle, you have to expect these kind of pullbacks.
Yep.
So the fact that it's happened means it's just happened. Just prepare better for the next one potentially.
Yep.
So have a look at your positioning, see how you were. Especially those doing leverage trading. We saw ridiculous amounts of liquidations, which we expect and we know is going to happen. I think it's like 30% of open interest got wiped out in one single day.
Yep.
It's wild. But yeah, here we are.
Personally, like on the weekend, I saw a few of my altcoins. I know I've talked on the show. Sui is one I hold, Say and Beam.
Yep.
Those were down like, you know, on average about 40% each. Yep. So I just dollar cost averaged and bought the dip a little bit there.
Yep.
Not to say that they could go down further, like you said, but just... And it's an opportunity to get things lower.
It's an opportunity to work towards your long-term plan, right?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I played it.
Very good. Top movers. This is what we've got to look at this week. Just an even sea of red.
Yes. And yeah, you're right. And they're all red. There's not a single green in there. No real surprises there. I think even on the 24-hour chart, it's probably the same.
Yeah. Let's have a look at the day. I think there'll be some improvers, higher performers.
Core, yeah, that's one we spoke about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
being a new kid on the block, as you could say.
Actually, do you know what? I'll give away a little juicy insight. So these are the type of market conditions. I think I spoke about it on previous episodes where I really like to build my watch lists, and I have a very, very simple technique. It works for me, may not work for you, but I can at least run over very quickly in 2 minutes what it takes. So you can use any aggregator or coin, what do you call these websites?
Coin listing, coin aggregator websites. Coin
performance websites.
Yeah. Like CoinGecko, CoinMarketCap.
Yeah.
Key ones.
And essentially what you can do is like, we're all used to valuing things in US dollars or Aussie dollars, but you can actually come here and value things against Bitcoin. So once again, if the whole market's going down and you want to see what's potentially running the best against the best performing asset, which is Bitcoin, this is how you can come down and find them. So change your valuation to Bitcoin. And you can just track here on the 24-hour and 7-day-a-week performance percentages what assets are performing the best. So you can see here the top three right now in the last 7 days, Ondo, Toncoin, and Pendle. And I think I just remembered in the crypto bubbles there that we saw that they also made an appearance there on the best performers of the daily. So what this sort of tells to me is that while Bitcoin is recovering, these assets are recovering even better.
Yep.
which kind of gives some sort of indication as to there might be some syndicates, some people, some investors, some whales, whoever they are, doesn't matter. The market in general is buying these assets.
Yep. So despite them, you know, going down or not showing like super strong performance, they're performing strongly in the current market conditions.
Correct. So when the market conditions reverse and you see these continue to perform, that's likely how you find your higher beta performers or high performers in a bull market too, like when the market does sort of stabilize. So this is how I sort of sniffed out the likes of Solana, Sui, say back last year as well. Anytime there was a dip on Bitcoin, they were being picked up the fastest and most aggressive. So basically, I'd come here, I'd add the first 5 to 10 onto a watch list on TradingView, and I'd just continue to monitor to see if they keep getting purchased every time there's a dip. But that's a very simple and effective way you can go about doing your own research, which can be daunting.
Absolutely. And I want to highlight some of the top three you mentioned there, Ondo and Pendle.
Very fitting.
Yeah, so this kind of leads into our next segment, which focuses on real-world assets, Ondo and Pendle being
two. So what is a real-world asset, Ted?
Pav, I'm glad you asked, because for the next 5 to 10 minutes, we will break it down.
Let's go.
So before we get into like individual cryptocurrencies that fall into this sector, it is important to kind of simply explain what the tokenization of real-world assets is, because it might seem simple, but it can sometimes get confused, and so we're going to break it down bit by bit. So a real-world asset represents a physical asset like gold, real estate, and other commodities, and they're tokenized on the blockchain. So we've spoken about this a little bit before, but it's just really, this sort of sector has really been gaining traction a lot, particularly as BlackRock and the BlackRock CEO Larry Fink has called it out, being like, I want to tokenize every stock and bond out there.
I think his quote was, the ETF is to lay way to adoption for blockchain so we can then do tokenization of assets.
Yeah, exactly.
Their plan,
And BlackRock is leading the way in terms of like TradFi getting into the tokenization of assets, because we've seen their tokenized fund on Ethereum that's been super successful thus far. I think it's the biggest blockchain tokenized fund in the world. So it's tokenizing bonds on the blockchain. So you can basically buy a fractionalized bond or a small amount of a bond. So it's like a low risk asset on the blockchain. So we think of blockchain assets and cryptocurrencies as being high risk. The idea is like bring real world assets like gold, commodities, real estate to the blockchain. So it allows it to be more accessible, more liquidity. You know, you fractionalize something. So when we talk about houses, like buying a house is very expensive, right? Like I know I can't buy a house outright right now.
Don't be so modest, Ed.
I mean, who knows? Maybe in 6 months, but, because I'm looking to real estate as a, you know, a valid investment, I might look to buy a fractionalized.
Well, you might look to spread your bets, right? You might want to buy a third of a house in three different capital cities.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it basically reduces that commitment and also makes it a bit more liquid and accessible, right? Like you could, I don't know how it will work, you know, a few years down the track, but you could potentially day trade real estate.
You could. That's really what
like
this
is. Literally individual houses.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Like I think something so boring and simple like bonds, it is a very clunky system, even like lending and like traditional finances, TradFi outfits, like how the banks and the central banks operate, any sort of optimization there, they're definitely seeing that as an opportunity for real world assets. And you think about trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars worth of value going on a blockchain, whatever blockchain even owns 20, 30% of that market share, they're the kind of tokens that I think are going to be huge.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're looking to unpack today. So let's just dive in. So, I mean, obviously when we're accessing real world assets, I think there's three major sort of facets to the real world asset narrative, really. Yep. You've got the underlying tech or the blockchain for it. So you've got your layer ones, layer twos. Mm-hmm. You have your oracles. So how does data feed into the smart contracts?
Yep. So to break that down a little bit more, how does the real world data, for instance, in this case, you know, the price of a house feed onto the blockchain? You need an oracle like Chainlink to bridge that data.
Yep.
And then, the last one is the individual protocols. So we mentioned Ondo and Pendle before as being two front runners in that regard.
Yeah. Some other examples, Clearpool, Centrifuge, they're all looking to, again, just give, access to these sort of products, I guess. Yeah.
So let's break it down. So I guess if you're in cryptocurrency and you want to diversify into the real world asset kind of sector or narrative, whatever you want to call it, you might look to get in one of three of those ways or more than one.
Yep.
So layer ones, we've got here listed like your classics, ETH and the layer twos on ETH, so Arbitrum and Optimism. ETH is obviously the key one because it's the biggest and most decentralized.
You could argue the most secure as well. Just because of its, the way it's built. But
exactly. But yeah. ETH is so big and broad that it's got a huge ecosystem. I'm not yet aware of any layer ones or layer twos that just focus on real world assets. Like kind of like we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, how the Peak blockchain is building a layer one blockchain to focus on the DePIN, decentralized physical infrastructure narrative. Whereas I haven't seen that yet for real world assets.
I think they're coming. I think I could be wrong here, but I did see Quant, QNT. It looks like they're pivoting to that exact use case. Yep. So whether or not that's actually underlying tech that they have that's going to be useful, or they're just trying to run a narrative right now, let the market decide that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I saw that, and I could be wrong, but Maker as well, MakerDAO, they might be starting their own chain as well for the same purpose.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. But you're right, like that's something that doesn't exist in a big way. So what if something did?
Maybe a bit of a gap in the market.
Maybe something to keep an eye on.
Do they even need a specialized blockchain for real world assets? Maybe not. But
we need a specialized chain for gaming.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all narrative. It's all narrative. Yeah, yeah, it's all narrative. Yeah, yeah.
We love the word narratives.
We
here.
Do. It's all about the story.
So yeah, you mentioned before oracles. I think two key ones at the moment are definitely Chainlink. So that's been around forever.
Yep.
That has always been like the kingpin of the Oracle networks.
You can kind of see their direction too. Like all of last year, we were talking as the market was heating up, them partnering with major banks, major central banks.
Yep. Did a big big partnership with ANZ, you know, big bank here in Australia.
NAB as well.
NAB, yeah, absolutely. So they're killing it there. And Pyth Network is, I guess, the new kid on the block.
It is.
In that space. Is that on the, correct me if I'm wrong, on the Solana network?
I think it's cross multiple, but like that's where I think most of the data feeds are sort of sending it to. Yeah, I could be wrong there.
Yep. And then, yeah, the protocols. So we've listed a few here. So Ondo, Pendle, Clearpool, and Centrifuge. So Ondo seems to be one that's popped up. We spoke about before. It's showed some pretty strong performance over the last sort of week against Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And it's been gaining a bit of traction as well. Can you explain, like, simply what the purpose of Ondo is?
Yeah, it's backed by the likes of Coinbase and Pantera. So two big VCs and fund, like, giants in the crypto space already. But it looks to me like essentially the product at this stage is giving access to traditional yield-bearing products on-chain. So we're not talking about you're going to make 20, 50, 100% APY like some of these more risky DeFi protocols that you see out there. Yep. They're looking just giving access to US Treasury bonds. So you can see here it's like 4.96% APY at the moment, and just general US dollar yield through their stablecoin USDY, so 5.2%.
Yep.
So again, this sort of bodes to like if money enters the crypto ecosystem, there might be a high chance of it sticking around if there is access to these better, more robust, you know, traditional finance-backed products. And that looks to be what it is at this stage. I haven't looked at their roadmap to see what else could be coming. I would say this is likely just the start. But again, we're just looking for the same thing you could do out of crypto. Why not make it available in crypto so you can just keep all that money on the chain, really? It looks to be, to me, the go there. But yeah, I mean, when you've got the likes of Coinbase behind you and Pantera, it's one that I don't think you cannot pay attention to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Personally.
Another one I want to call out is Maple Finance. So it was actually started by an Aussie bloke who worked at NAB, I believe.
All right.
I actually spoke to him on the phone, and he's a good guy. And they're kind of a smaller fish in sort of this pool compared to the other ones we listed here, but they do like on-chain lending, like securitized on-chain lending. And so they're really tying into that real world assets sort of realm. And I think they're more focused on the institutional lending side of things rather than like the retail, which we saw, you know, the likes of Aave and, you know, some of the other lenders, like they really picked up last bull market. So maybe this bull market, we might see a bit of a trend with institutional lending on-chain.
Yeah. And exactly the same sort of kettle of fish, but maybe, I guess, one that might be more established, Clearpool Finance. So again, it's allowing the everyday person to be able to lend money to larger institution for like prime brokerage. So like we mentioned, bigger institutions, lending is a part of their daily operations. They like to lend, pay it back on the end of the day so they don't have to expose risk to their underlying capital too frequently. So you can actually go search the people that you're effectively backing, and they're huge trading teams, they're huge funds, they're huge, just, you know, you got banks over here. That's essentially a credit card on ramp through crypto. It's everywhere. It's been around for yonks. They're paying, you know, rates for you to give them funds. So, you know, deposit USDT, banks will then give you back, I think the current rate's like 23% APY, and they'll go and do and pay you back within a certain period of time. So like, it's really just giving the investor more options at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Things that are usually, you have to be in the know or have a certain like level of credit to be able to access certain products. It's really removing barriers.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I guess in terms of those three categories, you could call them like, low risk, medium risk and high risk.
Yeah. Effectively.
So the layer ones being the low risk, the oracles being the medium risk and the real world asset protocols being the higher risk ones.
And I think about just tying it back to what we talked about before, like this is no different to other narratives that we spoke about in the past either. Like you've got very fundamental tech that needs to be established, maintained, functioning for any narrative, right? So for gaming, you would need a layer one, layer two as well. You would need an oracle as well. You would need a marketplace. You would need like, again, like these dApps, like we talked about just before. So really the theme isn't different. It's just about the use case and the adoption. So what you'd want to see now is like fundamentally all these projects, more active users, more value locked into the networks and everything just growing on chain metric wise. And that's going to show you that there's demand for it, right?
Yeah. And I think the continuation of BlackRock and maybe some other TradFi institutions getting involved in this sort of thing is just going to drive that.
Absolutely.
So I think the real world assets narrative is going to be one of the biggest ones in the next year.
We've been screaming for a world use case, right? So
this could be the one that leads the charge.
Yeah.
Mate, cool.
Good.
Yeah. So I mentioned at the start of the episode that we were going to finish off with a bit of a tipping comp. We're going to call it tick tipping. So tap into crypto tipping.
And we're open to suggestions for different names if you've got any.
Yeah. We came up with that just before we started.
It wasn't we're not very creative.
It's got a nice ring to it.
It's not too bad.
But yeah, we'll be using the SwiftDex demo mode. So if you have a SwiftDex account, you can do it yourself and even, you know, practice your trading on there. So it's a good little tool. So we're starting off with $10,000 USD. Every week we'll be making three trades. We'll update you guys every week on how the performance of our portfolio.
Are we going to make them now?
Let's make them now.
We'll do it now? All right. That way I can criticize you.
Okay. So I've got my three.
You got your three? You're already sorted.
Yeah. And I'll tell you why. I'll explain. So I'm starting with Ondo.
I thought you were about to say USDT.
To be honest, it wouldn't be a terrible play given the state of things. But starting with Ondo, one of those real world asset protocols that we just spoke about. As you mentioned, strong performance against Bitcoin. That is probably the strongest narrative in the altcoin market that we're seeing at the moment. So I think there's a bit behind that at the moment. I'm also looking to diversify a little bit of my actual portfolio into Ondo as well. So I think it's a strong project with a little bit more juice left in the tank. Next, I'm looking to Toncoin. So for those that don't know Toncoin, it's basically the token associated with Telegram, the messaging network. And the reason I'm looking to get into Toncoin for this demo competition is Token 29. So it's a big conference.
That's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, it's happening in Singapore this week. So I think it's Thursday, Friday, could be wrong. But there's a lot of speculation that Toncoin will come out with a major announcement at this conference. And we've seen it before at these sort of major crypto conferences worldwide where like a lot of these, crypto projects make major announcements and there's a lot of sort of spotlight on these talks at these conferences. And so like it's a good way to get the message out there and create a bit of buzz around, you know, some upgrades or anything happening in the market. So that's purely speculation. Toncoin's, you know, I think it's entered into the top 10 cryptocurrencies by market cap recently, driven by, you know, that association with Telegram. But yeah, this is purely speculation that they'll make a big announcement at Token 2049. So keep that in mind. It's not really based on anything other than that. Just a bit of a punt on this one.
Very good.
And then the last one, and I've rambled on a bit, is Chainlink. So yeah, I guess medium risk in that real world assets discussion we had before. And then they are also going to feature at Token 2049. So the CEO of Chainlink, I think, is going to come out with some exciting announcements. Again, more speculation, but I think with the combination of that and the real world assets narrative, I think it could have a strong week. So that's my three: Ondo, Toncoin, and Chainlink.
Ondo, Chainlink, and what was it? Toncoin. Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, yours is potentially more exciting than mine. I'm going Bitcoin. I'm going Celestia, TIA, and Solana. The reasons being, I think if we're going to get a bounce, Bitcoin's likely going to lead the way. And I'm looking for high beta or things that are going to outperform Bitcoin during that period. So again, just similar to what I showed earlier this episode, Solana and Celestia have been showing good returns against Bitcoin and they haven't quite moved in a big way like some of those real world assets that I spoke about. So I guess what I'm speculating there is that they will play a bit of catch up, I guess you could say. And it's again what we saw move previously when the markets have dipped. They've definitely been top performers. So definitely taking a bit of a chance there, but yeah, going for, I guess, a bit more of a safer play there, assuming that top caps will move a little bit better. Celestia being in that sort of 40 to 56 rank region. Yep. We'll see what happens. But I'm there. I'm all purchased.
Okay. So
I'm buying
Celestia and Solana. Yep. Very, very uninteresting there, Pav.
Yeah, I know, right? It sums me up, right?
Yeah, exactly. I can't wait to come back next week when I'm miles ahead of you.
Well, mate, it's fine.
You got to play catch up.
We'll see.
I guess we'll wait and see.
We'll see.
All right. Well, follow our socials for any updates on the screenshots of our portfolios and just more, you know, sort of insights and short clips of the podcast as well. So
yeah, let us know what you thought about this episode too. Like, I think sometimes doing just category deep dives like this, it's almost good for me just to remind myself of what's going on in certain ecosystems. So if you like what we've done, let us know. Yeah. See if we can do some more.
There's plenty of upcoming categories. You know, we're talking about building on Bitcoin, DeepIn.
Can't wait for that.
Broad assets, AI. So there's plenty to uncover there. So maybe we'll focus on that a bit more.
Very good.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Catch you next week.
Thank you so much for joining us for today's show. If you liked it, don't forget to head over to the gram and join us at Tapping Into Crypto. And before we finish up, just a general disclaimer that this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. And the opinions on this podcast belong to individuals and are not affiliated with any companies mentioned. Any advice is general in nature and does not take into account your own personal situation. If you're looking to get advice, please seek out the help of a licensed financial advisor. We'll talk to you soon.